Hey, Rick Micotta here. Can we talk? About 2 weeks ago, I was supposed to take a flight back to see the family in Philadelphia. I live in L.A. And I had a nonstop flight. I was going to see my mom, 96-year-old. I was really looking forward to it. And I don't know if you've taken a flight lately, but they're really pretty miserable. Seats are on top of each other. They're always late. They're asking for people to give up their seat kind of thing. And if you don't, they'll drag you off, apparently. And in any case, the night before my flight, I got this email that says my flight was canceled. Canceled? Any explanation? No explanation. They should even make something up. You know? No. It's just canceled. And what they do is they reroute you. So my nice, beautiful 8:10 in the morning nonstop became a 6:10 in the morning flight from LA to Phoenix, Phoenix to Indianapolis, and Indianapolis to Philadelphia. I had to get up at 3 a.m. to get onto this flight. You know, I thought they were going to charge me extra because they were going to tour me around the middle of America. I'd never been to Indianapolis, and I thought that, oh, okay, great. The highlight of my trip up till that point was seeing the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We flew right over it. It's right close to the airport. Really pretty impressive operation. There wasn't a car in sight, totally empty. In any case, when I boarded the flight from Indianapolis to Philly, it was one of those little crop duster two-seat, aisle two-seat kind of things. And this really well-dressed woman sat down beside me. And she saw that I was reading something medical, and she said, are you a doctor? And she said, well, I am too. And I thought, oh, that was interesting. And long and short of it was a little friendly conversation. And it turns out she is a physician with Eli Lilly. I remember then that Eli Lilly actually is based in Indianapolis, and she commutes back and forth to Philadelphia. She is an endocrinologist. Her specialty is diabetes. She is at a very high level in the company in that she does acquisitions. She doesn't just do this clinical study stuff. No, she was way above that. And I got to talk to a physician who works at a drug company. I said, I've never had that opportunity before. And here she is. She's captured. She's sitting beside me. She can't. There's no place to go kind of thing. Now, obviously, I didn't think she was going to spill the beans and all that kind of thing, but I thought I would have an interesting conversation. So this lady is an expert in diabetes. It just so happens, and I didn't know it at the time, that Eli Lilly is in the top three producers of insulin in the world, So I really kind of hit the jackpot. Why? Because I don't know if you've seen it recently, but there's been all of this talk about price increases for insulin. You go on the internet and look up insulin price increases, you'll see all kinds of stuff out there. As an example, between 2002 and 2013, the price of insulin has at least tripled. Oddly enough, the price between the three companies is very, very similar. No collusion here. No. And sure enough, they're being investigated for price fixing. Let's get a little bit more specific. In 2013, I didn't know this, more money was spent on insulin than all the other diabetes-related products out there. Combined, more money was spent on insulin. As an aside, I saw this. Diabetes and direct healthcare costs, not lost work or productivity or any of that stuff, is $250 billion a year, and it's going up about 25% over the last 5 years. 5 years is remarkable. In any case, Congress obviously is looking into this stuff. What they ever do, who knows, but they're looking into it. So I saw some testimony. One guy said, you know, my kid's insulin went from $300 to $900 for a 90-day supply. Okay, so it's $10 a day. But, you know, this fella subsequently went to Express Scripts. He's insured. Express Scripts is one of these pharmaceutical middlemen kind of thing. And on Express Scripts, even though he was insured, it was $1,489. So what does he do? He now gets his insulin from Canada, where it's $295 for a 90-day supply. Now, that's an entirely different subject. Hooray for the state of Maine, which basically said, we don't care what the feds say about importing drugs for Canada. You go right ahead. In fact, they get these buses of old people going up to Indian casinos up in Canada and getting their drugs at the same time. So again, what about the price of insulin? That was the question. She paused and said, It's complicated. Was there any explanation of the complications? No, it was just complicated. How can it be so complicated? The price is going up between three. I get another example, like Humalog in 1996 was $27 a vial. In 2017, it cost $275. That's 10 times increase in it. And yet insulin's been around almost 100 years. And strangely, there's no patents now on the key components of how you make insulin. And you would think, well, after 100 years, there would be no patents. But there have not been patents, number one. And number two, there are no generic insulins. These three drug companies, that's it. When you start reading about why drug prices are so high, you start to hear all this mumbling about incentive programs and rebates and wholesalers and middlemen and all of this other stuff. And everybody obviously is getting some kind of piece, but there's lots and lots of circuitous routes about how drugs get to be so expensive. And you can say, well, yeah, I'm insured. Well, somebody's paying all this stuff. And God forbid you're uninsured. And then you have to pay the list price. And the other thing is, what about all these people who have these, you know, high deductibles? I got a brother, his deductible is $8,000 a year. In any case, my colleague and I were sitting beside each other, and we were talking about drugs. At least I was. She wasn't really doing too much talking. I was doing the talking. And I think maybe it started out that maybe she got a sense that I was not a big fan of Big Pharma. I read an article recently. You might want to look it up. It's 2.5 pages long. It was in the April 15th issue of the journal called Cancer. And why it was in Cancer, well, I'll tell you in a second. You probably wonder, what am I doing reading the journal called Cancer? Here's a little background. Now, stop me if you've heard this. It's estimated that 1% of the world's population has chronic hepatitis C. And despite the fact that we now have drugs that will cure hepatitis C, the incidence of hepatitis C is going up. Why is that? Well, we'll talk about that in a second. In the United States, it's estimated that about 3.5 million people have hepatitis C. And this is all the stuff about the baby boomers who were doing all kinds of stuff when they were young and wild that has disproportionately caused them to have hepatitis C. And a lot of them, if not most of them, don't know about it because it's indolent there. And then after about 20 years, it takes out your liver. With regard to deaths of the 3.5 million people who have hepatitis C, there are 20 to 40,000 deaths a year, mainly from cirrhosis and liver cancer. That's why this got into the journal called Cancer. So here's a little history of the drug that is most popular for treating hepatitis C. The trade name is Sovaldi, and the generic name is Sofosbuvir. So anyway, this drug, like so many, was developed by a little boutique drug company, and it was discovered around 2007. 4 years later, a company called Gilead Sciences, bought the little drug company for $11 billion. At the time, it was believed and acknowledged that Gilead paid twice what the company was worth. Well, you know, maybe, but anyway, we'll find out. The FDA approved the drug in 2014. Gilead bought the place in 2011. The drug's approved in 2014. And then the first 27 months of sales, catch this, $36 billion in sales in 27 months. So who paid too much for that little boutique drug company? Certainly not Gilead. After Gilead bought that drug, there was this 3-year period from when it bought it to when it was released. It was estimated that Gilead spent less than $500,000 on R&D for that drug. So where do we stand now? The current cost of the drug is $1,000 a pill in the United States. You have to take it for 12 weeks. That's $84,000. In India, generic forms of the drug sell for between $200 and $500 for the whole 12-week course. $200 to $500 for the whole 12-week course. And it's been estimated that it costs less than $100 to make the 84 pills that you need for the 12 weeks. It's like $1.50 a pill or something like that. So Gilead, knowing that India can produce this drug so cheap, said, well, wait a minute, we'll give you a deal here. We'll charge you and they charge between $500 and $900 in India for a 12-week course. $84,000 in the United States, between $500 and $900 in India. In Egypt, the course for the Gilead medicine is $900 a course. Now, Egypt is a particular problem when it comes to hepatitis C. 20% of the population is believed to have hepatitis C, and there's a bunch of reasons for that, but it is 20%. So the idea is, even if you sell this drug for $900 a course in Egypt, you could make $10 to $20 billion easy. So Gilead is charging about $500 to $900 in India, $900 in Egypt, $7,000 in Brazil, $50,000 to $55,000 in Canada and the UK. What is that? That's $35,000 cheaper than the United States, right across the border. And between France and Germany, it's between $55,000 and $75,000. Somebody didn't get a very good deal there, but for sure, the U.S. got the worst, as it always does. So this article that I'm doing, or this thing that I'm doing, whatever this is entitled Medical Genocide. And basically, what we're talking about here is an essential drug but is made so expensive that selective segments of the population cannot afford it, while the cost of production of the drug is negligible, which is the case with this drug. So who are we talking about here? We're talking about the poor in all these countries, and the poor may be disproportionately represented by, you know, certain ethnic groups. So you can see that disproportionately, there's going to be more fatalities in these people, largely because they cannot afford the drug. Even in India, can you afford something that costs $500, $900 if you make $500 in a year or 2 years? And you have no savings we're talking about? So obviously, Gilead makes a lot of money. In a report from 2017 that I saw, it said that in the prior 12 months to that report in 2017, the company profit was 43%. Nobody makes 43% profit. By percentage, it is the most profitable of all the big pharma. And let's put it into perspective. You know, a lot of people think that, well, you know, that's kind of what corporations make. They make 25, 30, 40% profit. No. A study of 7,000 U.S. businesses noted an average profit of 8%. 7% when you exclude, the, you know, the big banks and Morgan Stanley and whatever those guys are. As an example, Walmart makes 2.1%. 2.1%. And why? Actually, the profit percentage is going down largely because they're selling more and more groceries where the margins are less than when they sell retail clothing and the like. It's kind of interesting. So if Walmart takes in $100, the average sales tax in the United States is 6.5%. So $6.50 goes out to pay tax, and $2.10 goes into their pocket. The tax is triple what they take home. Triple what they take home. So what are we doing about this? We're doing absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. Big Pharma can outlobby just about any element of our society, and they do. This has been going on. This drug has been out there for over 4 years. 4 years. When are we going to fix this problem? We don't have the intestinal will to do it, it appears. So I find it really kind of discouraging. And I want you to think of the idea of medical genocide. I think, honestly, too, that if doctors just start getting pissed off and representing their patients like they're supposed to, you know, we can start importing drugs from Canada, and we can start, you know, I want to go to India, and I want to take a big suitcase, and I want to fill that suitcase up with their $1.50 drug and bring it back here. I could save all of Camden, New Jersey with this drug. In any case, that's enough. Send me an email. Let me know what you think. Trick Buchanan signing off. Talk with you next month. Bye for now.